Good morning. Welcome to this Monday edition of the Roundtable Panel. Nice to have you with us, and we're grateful that you are here and are checking in to finding out what's going on in the world. And not surprisingly, there is a lot going on right now, and we will be talking about it. Let me introduce the panel, and then we'll get started. Let us welcome Mike Spain to the program. We missed Mike Spain last week because he was on jury duty.
I did my civic duty, and now I'm here. I've been liberated, and here I am.
Did you actually get?
Well, you were in panel.
I was called to a jury in Schenectady County for a sad domestic violence case, and sworn in. And the next morning showed up. That was Tuesday morning to do my duty. And they kept us, the jurors, in the jury room for a little while. And then the judge called us in and explained that just being seated and ready to pass judgment was enough to compel the defendant to take a plea bargain. And the trial ended. So it was, but it was still fascinating to see the process. And, you know, anybody who gets called, I know it's an annoying thing to reschedule everything, but it is. It's part of your civic duty, and you can't get out of it.
And you can't get out of it.
Right.
So you might as well look at it as an opportunity to see the system.
In Massachusetts, I think if you're over a certain age, you don't have
70
to
in New York, 70, yeah. You can decline, but you don't have to.
No, you don't have to.
Yeah, decline. Yeah. Yes.
And I have to say, it was one of the I served on a jury many years ago, and it was a life changing experience for me. I
remember you saying that.
Yeah, it's unlike anything. You all listen to the same evidence, and you're like, oh great, I can be at lunch by 11, and then everyone's like, no, he's not guilty.
No. Really?
Were you Henry Fonda?
I've told the story before, but my mother-in-law was the foreman of the jury.
Right. I can't believe this story.
Wow. Okay.
I was on the jury. So was justice served? I don't know. We'll see. Good morning, Mike. Nice to have you here.
Thank
Terry
you.
Gibson is with us once again. He is a SUNY New Paltz communications professor as well as a former New York State senator. Good morning, sir. Nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me back.
Thank you very much. And our good friend Joe Bonilla is here. He is a communications consultant, a busy, busy guy, and we are thrilled that you could make some time for us this morning.
Absolutely, as always. Good morning, Joe.
Thank you very much. And Dr. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, I have different feelings this morning. I'm both depressed, angry, really down, because This thing with Trump is just beyond anything anybody could have imagined. If you were a screenwriter, you couldn't write it. And if you wrote it, what would the dark music behind the whole thing be?
You'd get sued for plagiarism because somebody already wrote this
probably.
Movie, I think. It was.
I don't know. We're living in a Bond movie.
Yeah.
I mean, without
almost.
A hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. So President Trump appeared briefly with President Vladimir Putin a little while ago before their one-on-one talks, and said that they would discuss topics from trade to military to nuclear. The meeting comes days after the Justice Department indicted 12 Russian intelligence agents on charges of hacking during the 2016 U.S. election. As of right now, we are waiting for the meeting to break up. We have been told that there is a tentative 9:50 press conference, meaning a press conference that would happen about 9:50. We hope to bring that to you, and obviously it all depends on the timing, and those timings are very random, so we'll see what happens. But we'll keep you up to date as we discuss this throughout the morning. But as of Friday, when we had our amazing talk with Malcolm Nance, it was just after that where the Justice Department indicted the 12 Russian intelligence agents. Democrats on Capitol Hill came swarming together to say that the meeting between President Trump and President Putin should be canceled. The White House put out a press release around 4:30 on Friday afternoon saying that ain't gonna happen.
What's so extraordinary about this is how the entire intelligence team, foreign relations team of Trump, is against this and thinks this is terrible. Yet he goes in there and he does it. And we're being told from the leakers and others this morning that one of the reasons he didn't want anybody else in the room was he didn't want his own people doing terrible things to his agenda. You appoint these people. They're Republicans. They're in your own. It looked like Bolton was going to cry outside of the anti-Russian guy, standing out there looking completely bewildered, if not bewitched.
And bothered.
And certainly bothered. And this is really bad. And one can only draw one's conclusions. As you all know, I drew mine a long time ago. I think somebody belongs. I think something has happened. Somebody said to me the other day, Putin will eat his lunch. I said, no, Putin has already eaten his lunch.
This is second dessert now, right?
What'd you say?
It's second dessert now.
Yeah.
We already had the first dessert.
I mean, there's an article in the New York Times today of that is headlined, just sitting down with Trump, Putin comes out ahead.
Well, yes.
The win is that you have the meeting. And the conventional wisdom here is that all that the president needs to make happen is for the meeting to go without any major friction, and you have a success for Vladimir Putin.
But Joe, he's already tweeted this morning that it was all our fault. It was all the United States' fault. We're to blame for this. And out comes a Russian tweet in response to that saying, "We agree."
Right.
We agree. Unbelievable.
Any surprise there?
Well, no, but it's chilling.
It's an exoneration of any responsibility or any culpability in the hacking. It completely ignores all the compelling evidence of the hacking.
Well, not to mention war crimes and everything else.
Right, right. Never mind
shooting down planes.
The whole gamut.
You know, I mean, it's terrible.
Well, let's not forget that his own intelligence, the head of the National Intelligence, the person that he nominated, Dan Coats, has come out and said, not only should we be concerned about the hacking of the elections, let's also acknowledge that they are also right now hacking our businesses, our local governments, that they are very much in our cyber digital system right now. And he ignores that. So he ignores everyone that's reporting to him. It seems no matter what rank, no matter how much experience they have, no matter how much evidence there is, it really doesn't matter to him.
Well, the other side of it, too, is that, you know, as this administration has been moving our nation, you know, more and more to this isolated state, he himself within the White House is becoming more isolated. And we're seeing that directly today with him just saying, like, I want to go at this alone. I want to talk to the president of Russia by myself and not even listening to anything, you know, anybody wants to hear from him. So this is where we start getting into the danger zone here, where he is only listening to himself more so now than before.
So how do you then ask, or how do you then answer the question, meaning if you're the president of the United States, how do you answer the question of that you're not, I want to say complicit, but you're not complicit with the Russians in some way when you're shoving everyone else aside and you're saying, I know what's best, and we're going to sit down and talk to these people, even against the reservations of everyone.
So it may mean that he's...
I'm sorry, Alan, but just... And also, to the... let's not forget, we'll get into the rocket that he fired at the EU last night, but the fact that you do this also against the will of all of your allies.
Right. Your allies and your subordinates.
Right.
And if one and one doesn't make two, I don't know what's happening here. This guy is now owned by the Russians. That is now the next question is, why is he owned by the Russians? Do they have stuff on him from the pre-campaign that will, you know, makes him so complicit that he has to do whatever they want? But it is strange, and shame on us as a people that we can't mobilize and see this. You know, when they're doing the polling, the quick and overnight polling on all of this, the same 40% are all for him, all saying, well, you know, he's right. He's not losing anything.
And Joe, when you mentioned, you say our allies. Remember, they're our allies. They're the United States allies. But I think what we're seeing here is that they're not our president's allies. They're not Donald Trump's allies.
No.
It's two very different things, and it's very telling about how he sees his role.
Yep.
Yeah, but, you know, they might, believe it or not, it's plausible that they don't have any, you know, dirt on him. They don't really have the P tape, so-called, you know, the silver dossier or whatever it is. And in fact, they're just playing him the way Kim Jong-un played him, and they're complimenting him and making him talking him up and making him feel like an important man, looking at him eye to eye, giving him respect, putting out the red carpet, all those things that he succumbs to so quickly.
Perhaps the puppet that Hillary Rodham Clinton said during the the debate?
Perhaps, yes.
But it seems with Russia, though, you know, it seems much more that we there's some sort of link there. You know, North Korea, obviously, there's the optics of trying to make a deal in terms of, you know, the diplomatic world. But with Russia, it does seem like there's been this insistence upon making something work with them that doesn't smell right.
No, his co-writer in The Art of the Deal,
Tony Schwartz.
Tony Schwartz has announced that, you know, he's lost it. He's crazy. There have been a lot of shrinks who have been saying that from the sidelines. Nevertheless, that's also, Joe Bonilla, a possibility here.
Absolutely.
Well, I think the business opportunities are well established if you look back at the history with Russia, whereas not so much with North Korea. So that is really the difference, is the business opportunities have been there for a long time, and those relationships have probably been developed.
But whatever megalomania becomes controlling, he may be crazy, he may have taken money, he may have done any of that stuff, but in the end, he thinks he can beat them all.
Well, he's really controlling nothing, though. What is he controlling? I
mean, well, he's the president of the United States, Terry. He's the president of the United States.
He is, but he's not doing a very good job controlling that. He's not controlling the people that work for him. He's not controlling. What is he controlling? I mean, for a man that pledges to have so much control and so much deal-making power, I don't really see it.
The one thing he is controlling is the conversation that we're talking about right now. And that's where he has only succeeded, is in terms of dominating and taking over.
Which, case in point, I was thinking of this last night, which is 2-3 weeks ago, all we were talking about was the meeting with Kim Jong-un. That was all we were talking about. The meeting happened. There was a handshake. There was some agreement. There was an agreement, they said. And then everyone walks away. And from the president's point of view, the meeting was
over.
It's over, and it's a great success. Meanwhile, all of the accounts that have come since then from, again, the subordinates, the people who are actually doing the work, say, no, we have real problems. We're not
exactly
reading any.
Pompeo went over, and instead of meeting with Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-un went to a potato farm to make a visit and snubbed him. And he came out of it and tried to portray it as a success, and they were criticizing him and saying he was strong-arming them and that kind of thing.
And this is to Joe's point, Joe Bonilla's point about the so he's directing of what we're talking about. Right now we're talking about the meeting of Putin. But regardless, even as horrifying as it is, what actually comes out of it? And what long-term comes out of it?
Or, Joe, what doesn't come out of this?
Right.
I mean, I think that's the other side of this. I mean, you know, this guy, Putin, is getting away with murder.
Right, yes, but he's also getting some video that he'll use in the 2020 re-election campaign. And he'll hear the solemn music, and he said, and they'll show him with Kim Jong-un, they'll show him with Putin, and it will say, he met with the leaders across the globe.
So Mikey, when he...
People don't like that.
When he announces, when the Russians tweet that we agree that it's all your fault, and they say, you said it, we agree with that, they didn't have to do that. That didn't look good.
Malcolm Nance coined the term on your program Friday, which was an excellent program with Malcolm Nance, and he said it's treasony.
Yeah, treasony.
It's not actually treason, but it's treasony.
But when they said we agree, that is humiliating.
It is.
That's really humiliating. They didn't have to go that extra step because they had the president already saying it. They say we agree. That's to say, okay, Trump, will remind you of who's the master in this relationship.
Well, he's delivering their talking points every step of the way. He is delivering exactly what they want him to do and what they want him to say, and has called out his own country. The President of the United States this morning called out the country he represents, which is just unheard of and is, I think, treasonous or treasury, however you want to say that word.
Right. Not so much American first.
Right. But it's wrong, and the American people, I hope, will step up and hold them accountable for it.
The when you look at the rest of the world watching this, I mean, where does this put us then as we start to, I mean, Trey, just one aspect of it, but as we move forward and it just seems like everything, there's an article in the Times today saying that Trump rattles the international order. The question is, can he break it? Well, yes, right?
That's what Putin wants. Putin wants the international order broken. That is the goal.
He's already succeeded. Putin has already probably succeeded beyond his wildest dreams. He's caused chaos in Europe with the Brexit and with the right, the rise of the right, and now he's got the president of the United States kowtowing to him publicly and admitting that the U.S. was wrong and Russia was right. It's amazing.
The only way to save this from the United States perspective is for Congress to take action. And that's where I think the American people can really have an influence on this in the upcoming midterm elections.
Okay,
that's
so
our chance to try to fix this.
You're the politician. What the hell is going on with the Republican United States senators who are looking at those polls and are saying, we're not going to do a thing about this. We're not going to step up. We're not going to be brave. We're not going to do it. You're the politician. Tell me when the United States Congress is going to get around to that.
Well, there's the Republican Party, and then there's the United States Congress, and there's the Democratic Party, and those are three very different things. The Republican Party is the party of Donald Trump. That's clear now. So they are falling in line with
him.
Oh,
I don't know about that.
I don't know that they are.
So
far,
the
it looks that way.
No. Trump's got his foot on their neck, all right, and they're doing what he wants, all right. But we keep hearing that they hate him. And then they talk to each other about what an idiot he is. But they are so afraid of their constituents.
Well, you can talk, but there's no action.
How many of them have come out? How many of them that are not
in safe seats
or up for re-election have come out?
I agree. That's
all
right.
Spoken against this.
We're going to pause you there because we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. And we'll go to letters and much more on this subject right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. It's the 16th of July, 35 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. And the we know that the meeting is has gone over 2 hours between Vladimir Putin and President Trump. And there is, we expect, some press availability that we hope to bring to you at some point. We're giving being given a time, a very specific time of sometime between 9:50 and 10:50. So there you go. Alan has some letters in the meantime, and then we'll move on and talk about other aspects of the story.
And by the way, folks, we really do treasure your letters. So write them. Ashu from Cairo said, I'm afraid the screenplay has already been written. It's called The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was the Manchurian
Candidate.
It's a combo of the two.
I asked somebody who majored in English the other day whether they were studying Chaucer, and she said, who? Okay, so anyway, here we go.
Although studying Atwood isn't bad.
What did you say?
No, studying Atwood isn't bad. No. That's good.
You're kind of glass.
Here you go.
Yeah, right. I'm good with that.
Mary says, New York Magazine, I recommend that fellow WAMC listeners read Jonathan Chait's article in New York Magazine about Trump's Russian connections, which date back to his first trip to Moscow in 1987. You know, I have to say New York Magazine has been doing a fabulous job in all of this. They really know what they're doing. Thank you, Mary, for that letter. And Russ says, what comes naturally? Dear panel, there's nothing new or different in Mr. Trump's approach to symmetry. As a 19th century mercantilist, he believes that it is only right and proper for Russia, China, and the U.S. to pursue spheres of influence, even in Europe, where he promotes, as does Putin, any movement towards division and dissolution. The problem with empires, however, is that they eventually require real tank treads on the ground. And Sharon says, state of mind, I'm with you, Alan, scared and angry. I'd be interested in your view on this. Trump's mental state. Is he crazy like a fox, parenthesis, cunning, headed down the road of dementia, or some combination of the two? And that's Sharon from Williamstown, Massachusetts. You know, Sharon, we don't know, but there is a good deal of the psychiatric community which has broken the bounds of their professional propriety and the rest who have said, called him out, said, you know, he's really nuts. You know, they've been criticized for doing that. And today we see his co-author,
Tony Schwartz.
He's been critical of Trump all along.
I mean, from into the campaign. I mean, he's basing it on the 18 months that he spent with him while he was writing
every day.
But it was for a long time ago. I don't know that it's completely fair, but still.
Okay, and that's from Sharon. And then we have heard from Deborah, who says, outrage. Why is no one screaming? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 question marks. Why is no one screaming? Maxine Waters seems to be the only sane person left. Do you think that time will not look kindly on the GOP? I am just so outraged by all of this. I believe that women are going to end up saving the world, and that's from Deborah.
I hope so, Deborah.
Me too. Is that your way of saying not so far?
Oh no, I just wish that someone would save the world, and if women are going to step up to the job, I'm thankful.
I don't know that we should be dividing ourselves, except to say, we all better step up now. If not now, when?
All kidding aside, you're right.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, there comes a point in which you have to acknowledge who your enemies are, and Russia is an enemy. They have missiles pointed at us. They are in our digital cyber system right now with the ability to hack governments, businesses. It's not just about what happened during President Obama's time. It's not what happened during the elections. It's much, much bigger than that.
What's happening right now?
It's happening right now.
No, they're our enemies.
I'll say that Obama's administration underestimated the threat of a cyber security breaks and should have done more, and probably the Bush administration before him. We need to recognize this as an active, engaged war going on where foreign enemies are coming in and undermining us, and that's happening now.
Well, just think about it for a minute. It's possible that we have a president who is an illegitimate president who shouldn't be president, and that because of a foreign power hacking into our election process is the president. Something's not right here.
Well, it should be pointed out that even Friday, when the FBI announced the indictments of the 12 Russian officers, military officers, they stressed that there so far is no evidence that it changed the outcome of the 2016 election.
Well, like anti-chicken soup, it couldn't help.
Look, the responsibility for this country falls on the shoulders of whoever is president at the time, and that is this president, Trump, right now. So what happened in the past is past. It's either his opportunity to step up and play a leadership role and get serious about protecting our country, or to hand over our safety and security to one of our biggest enemies, if not the biggest enemy, and it looks like he's prepared to do that.
Well, I think to Mike's point, I think in terms of like really strengthening and protecting our digital infrastructure, because we saw what happened in 2016. We could see it again in the midterm election. We could see it in 2020. So what we're doing now has long-term impacts to our electoral system.
Okay, that's right. So think about it this way. If Trump won, at least in part, I'll give you that, Mike, because of the Russians, at least in part, why would he want to change that? Why would he want to change the system?
That's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about him. For you.
I mean, the thing that, well, there are so many parts of this that are troubling, and we haven't even gotten to the, on the eve of this, the president says that the EU is a foe. I mean, that's okay. Well, so we can talk about that. But also, we have elections coming up in just a few months, and absolutely nothing has been done to protect those elections. We have not taken at all the everyone, minus the president's concerns and complaints about the hacking of our elections, whether they had a direct impact or not, which cannot be proven. But still, nothing is being done for this election cycle. I don't know.
But Joe, you're right. Let's say the FBI said what has been said here, that there's no proof that they changed the election. What the FBI has said, however, and what the Justice Department has said, and what the Republicans have said, is that they did it. That the Russians did it.
Well, that's what I don't get. So the Republicans are saying that, but they're doing nothing to protect our next election cycle. I don't understand.
Well, I wonder
why.
Until
it's no longer in their favor.
Now, they're probably fighting within themselves about whether to try to ride this. Because if the election were held tomorrow, I think the House and the Senate would remain Republican.
There's certainly a good chance of that.
Right. And they're probably just trying to get to that point. And probably some of them rationalize it, saying we'll stay in control and then we'll do something with Trump after the midterms because he has to be dealt with. But
Mike,
we'll wait.
Mike, I have often said of you.
I'm not agreeing with that. I'm saying that's a rationale.
That you are the nicest person I have ever met in my entire life. And you are. Nevertheless, this is really frightening. And the fact that we have the proof, that we know they did it, that we know that they're in there, we don't really know whether they made a difference or not. But they could take both houses of Congress again. You are absolutely right about that, Terry. No
and
question.
That's all they care about right now.
No, that's all they care
well,
about.
Well, also the state houses, too. Well, it's that's really the other side of it, too.
And that's important.
Right. Well, they've already got most of the state houses, and they're not likely to lose those anytime soon.
You never know. You never know till that moment you're watching the television at that night, and they've got all those fancy boards up there, and somebody says, look at this, look at that. You really don't know. And we certainly know from the Cortez election that she— you know, that she was supposed to lose by 35% and won, you know, and there was a 50% differential.
Well, we can only hope that that happens.
You don't know.
I mean, you don't know. But what you do see, as you're describing, is that politics is all about power. If you don't have power, you want power. And if you have power, you want to hold on to the power. And it is the reason that they are willing to sit back and watch this person put our country in jeopardy. Yeah. It's sad, but that's what's happening.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. And we have letters. We'll go to those and move on to other aspects of this conversation.
Kathy says, good morning, all. I have said before, and I say again, it is possible that the GOP hate him, but cannot chastise him because they are somehow guilty. What did they buy before the 2016 election? Why did they change their position on Ukraine? What did they get in exchange? They behave as if they, capital letters, are being blackmailed, and I believe they are. The GOP would act if Trump didn't have the goods on them. Well, you know, folks, I don't agree with that necessarily. I think they certainly did everything in their power in that campaign up to the nomination to bring him down, and they didn't. And now they're just plain old scared of him.
Well, they're scared, but they want to preserve their power.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, self-preservation.
They're scared of him, and why are they scared of him? Because they don't want to lose those seats. They want Senator on their gravestone. And they feel very strongly about that. However, remember, everybody, history is being written as we sit here. And while I don't know the end of this story, it could end quite badly. I don't know the end of this story. I do know that history is being written, and it could turn out, if Mueller does his job and if the FBI does their job and if everybody does what they're doing, that all those people who have been shilling for him all along are going to be very sorry about having done so. And boy, when the shift comes, right? When the shift comes, when the wind begins to blow the other way, you're going to see a lot of very scared people vehemently turning against this guy.
I think I saw in the news that today is the 45th anniversary of, is it 45th? Of the Watergate tapes becoming public knowledge.
Yeah.
It was on this day that that the Watergate tapes were revealed. So, you know, maybe that'll be on our side. Something will happen.
Could happen. The real
took
question
another
is,
year after that to get rid of Nixon.
Right. What will turn?
We got to start.
Yeah, start somewhere, Mike.
What will turn? What would be the agent of change here? What would make it turn in that kind of way?
I don't know. I mean, you know, people talk about what is the equivalent of the Supreme Court ruling that the tapes may be made public or should be made public. And that may come down to a Supreme Court having to decide whether a president can be compelled to respond to a subpoena. And he's packed the Supreme Court and is about to add somebody who believes in presidential autonomy. So,
couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
Couldn't agree with you more. Okay, so then we've heard from Dean. Why not make a plea to The Hague to arrest Trump? I love these letters. I do. I truly love you all. And
we don't recognize the International Court. I love you. It has no jurisdiction.
When he steps onto EU soil, he considers them a foe. Why not act on his known human rights abuses before it is too late? Sure. Let's go right up to The Hague and say, arrest the President of the United States right now. That'll do it. I hear your pain, though. Treason Summit Day 1. Comrades. I like that. Comrades. No one elected official, left, right, center, conservative, progressive, got off their comfortable tush and flew to Helsinki to form a diplomatic human chain to resist or perhaps stop this meeting. Another good one. Shame on all of them. They're all complicit. And that's Steve. Thank you very much, Steve. And Robert says, winning. Dear panel, during Mr. Trump's campaign, he said, you will be winning so much that you will be sick of winning. Yes, Mr. Trump, if this is winning, we the people are sick of winning. By the way, I wonder, what is the trigger word?
The Manchurian candidate trigger word.
The trigger word. I do want to talk about, before we go to our top of the hour break, I do want to talk about what happened on Friday and the Guccifer 2.0, the message from WikiLeaks in 2016 to a group of Russian intelligence officers who prosecutors say were posting as a Romanian hacker named Guccifer 2.0 urged swift action before the opening of the Democratic National Convention that month. If you have anything Hillary-related, we want it in the next 2 days, preferable because the DNC is approaching the error-ridden message red, and she will solidify Bernie supporters behind her after. WikiLeaks had begun seeking stolen files under Guccifer 2.0 weeks earlier, after revelations that the Democratic National Committee server had been hacked, according to private messages cited in the indictment filed Friday by special counsel Robert Mueller. The organization had told Guccifer that publishing the stolen material on the WikiLeaks site will have a much higher impact than what you're doing. This all brings up several questions.
It sure does.
I mean, one of the things that came out of the indictments on Friday is that there in those indictments we found out that coincidentally the day that President Trump said, Russia, if you're listening, you know, where are the 30,000 emails, and
invited them to basically go hack,
and they did.
And yeah. let's remember they did.
And
let's remember that Roger Stone was communicating.
Correct.
With
so Roger Stone
an operative
is
operative of yeah. Trump's.
Yes. So where does that? I mean, what do we make of all of this? Because obviously, with the indictment of, I think it's obvious, with the indictment of these 12 individuals, it's not like all of this activity has stopped.
Okay, Joe. I want to help our listeners to understand this. And I must say, you sent us that article, and as you know, I don't like to prepare, but I actually read it a couple of times. trying to figure some of this out. Okay, you don't have to be the only answerer, but here's the first question. Who is Guccifer?
Well, it was a name they came up with, right?
He's a Romanian hacker.
That name came from combining Gucci and, I believe,
Lucifer.
To get Guccifer. Yeah.
Okay, but who is behind it? Do we know this?
It's Russian hackers.
Okay,
yes. It's Russian hackers who are portraying themselves as an individual in Romania.
It's KGB correct. Russian hackers.
These 12 yeah. Russian right. operatives.
So yes. Now we know that Guccifer...
Well, included in this.
The Guccifer, again, Guccifer is a bad guy, or bad people.
This is Guccifer 2, yeah. right? So it's different 2. Than...
2.0.
Yeah,
right.
It's different than Guccifer 1, right. which was who is in jail now. The original Guccifer is in jail now. He was caught hacking. He was from Romania, but this is a new Guccifer that's been... has taken over that name.
And when they put him in jail, who put him in jail?
That's a good question.
High-level security breaches in the U.S. and Romanian governments, and only 46 years old. I thought he was older than that. He was jailed in his native Romania in 2014 for 7 years after being convicted of hacking emails of Romanian officials. He was subsequently extradited by Romania to the United States, where he was indicted on federal charges in May 2016, he pleaded guilty in federal court to 2 charges and was sentenced to 52 months in prison in the U.S.
This is Guccifer 1.
Correct.
We're talking about
correct.
Guccifer, no, it's Guccifer 2.
You've got to know the history of Guccifer sequel. To really understand yeah. Guccifer. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk second. My next question is, what does Roger Stone have to do with all of this?
Well, he was in communication with Guccifer 2.0, telling authorities that he believed he was talking to a Romanian. He did not have believe he was talking directly with Russian hackers, and he thought he was talking to a Romanian. Now, still, he's talking to a foreign
this
power.
Is what, right.
right.
I mean, he's talking
still,
to
one
a hacker.
One does not make one better than the other.
Right. 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 Why is it okay to give information away to Romania but not Russia? I don't know the difference.
Now, we also should note that he was not named in the indictment,
that's
although
correct.
He...
he's admitted that.
But
though.
He says yeah. he's probably... the unnamed person in Mueller's indictment, and in the process has changed his story, than what he had testified to earlier.
And what he had testified to earlier was he hadn't done anything like this, right?
That it was, my understanding was, is that, what you were saying earlier, that it wasn't Russia, that he was.
Right.
He thought it was originally Romania.
Romania, right.
So you're allowed to lie to Congress and then to change your story.
According to Roger Stone.
Seems to happen quite often these days.
Yeah, he seems to do that. But that shouldn't be a surprise if you just look at the history of Roger Stone.
And a lot of people are waiting for that shoe to drop. Now, it's interesting to me that shoe has not dropped yet, which is that he's going to be indicted. And a lot of people have thought so. I think he may have even said it himself, that he expects this to happen. So you got to try to get inside Mueller's head and say, oh, well, I wonder why what he's holding out here, as in with everybody else, he might be the right guy to bring the house down.
How many shoes do have to drop before the Republican Party steps up and says, you know what, we've had enough. We're going to take over, and we're going to take back control of our country.
Okay, you're the politician. You tell us.
Well, none of the – there aren't
enough.
Yeah,
Terry.
I got the whole plan right here. Let me explain how it all
you
works.
You figure this out.
But I will say this. You know, politicians respond to the constituents in their district. They respond to their security and being reelected. There just are not enough Republicans in Congress right now that feel threatened in terms of reelection. They are, as a party
– On the contrary.
There aren't enough.
On the contrary.
You look at it the other way. I agree,
yeah,
Alan.
Yeah. On the contrary, they feel if they do what's responsible, they're done.
The primary supporters believe Trump.
Look at the numbers.
The numbers are the temperature. Exactly.
90% of the Republicans in the United States strongly support this guy. And by the way, when you look at what we are hearing today about his complicitness with the Republicans and everything else, they're still with him. They're still with him.
Well, that's their comfort zone. They believe that as long as they stay with Donald Trump, they're safe. That's what I mean. They're not vulnerable. There's no one from the other side pushing them in a different direction. Not enough. They don't feel that threat from the other side to go against Trump. And until that happens, you're not going to really see a big change.
You won't get it this summer. Right. You won't get it before the midterms.
An interesting Washington Post thing this morning was that the Washington Post has learned, allegedly, and I only saw the crawl, that Mueller expects to end a good deal of this investigation by the end of the summer, which, of course, would put it before the midterms.
Sure.
So a good deal of what we're going to learn is going to be incredibly important. But if you want to ignore anything that anybody tells you, there's nothing that's going to make you turn around and say, well, this is important.
Well, I just can't believe that any Democrat needs any more evidence to come out and vote for a Democrat.
Okay.
Then we're just leaving the swing people in the middle who have to make a decision, and I can't believe they need more evidence either.
Well, now you have really put your finger right on it.
I don't know about that.
But. Well, no, we know that in presidential, our most well-attended elections, half the people don't vote.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So in congressional elections, it's a less number. And we also know something else. Okay, political scientists at Williams and other places, if you think I'm wrong, write me a note that more Democrats don't vote than Republicans don't vote.
I think that's been proven. Republicans are much more vigilant about voting. But this ambiguity about Trump and everything else could result in a lower turnout among Republicans who are just not enthusiastic
anymore.
Not
according to the polls. That's what's so disturbing about this. Now, the question has always been, if Democrats really want health care, if they really want better education for their kids, if they really want this, then why aren't they coming out to do this? My theory has always been that Republicans tend to protect, to exercise the franchise because they are protecting what they have as opposed to what they want. And I think that that's the answer to that conundrum.
Well, I think the other issue, too, I think going to Mike's point, is I think Republican turnout would have been less had the Kavanaugh nomination not taken place.
Mm. Say that again. I want to hear that again.
No, I think Republican turnout would have been less if the Kavanaugh nomination did not take place.
Mm.
Yeah. That'll bring some people out to thank him.
Well, there is no question that the good Republicans, the ones who really like the idea that the people on top should keep the most, they'll come out because of this nomination.
Well, I think you're also, certainly in the last few decades, you've just seen the Republican Party take organizing at a much more serious level. They've built a party that understands how important it is to win all seats, not just president, not just senator, not just House of Representatives. If you run for dog catcher as a Republican, you get the same amount of attention as if you're running for president of the United States. The Democratic Party just hasn't done that. They have not focused on winning seats across the country at all levels of government, and that has created a vacuum for divisiveness that we now see in the Democratic Party.
Raising the question, do they want to win elections or not?
Well, these are questions for Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi.
And for you.
Okay. Again, it's all on you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Ray Graff is next with news. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Monday. Monday, the 16th of July. Very nice to have you with us. Of course, we are watching the Trump-Putin meeting. The two have emerged from an over two-hour meeting. It was not scheduled to go that long. It did go over 2 hours. They are now having a working lunch, and then within a few moments or minutes or half hour or to an hour, they're going to have a press briefing, as the press is now gathering in Helsinki to get ready for that event, which we hope to bring to you live as it happens. In the meantime, we have letters from our listeners.
We do. I was just thinking, Trump leaning over to Putin and saying, hey, save Vlad. You really have to give me something to walk out of the room with. Something like that. You know what I mean? Okay, so John says, who else? A conversation I will have sometime in our near future with a Republican friend. Trump, who never apologizes, finally apologized. But it's to Putin. Republicans, he's apologizing for your country to its greatest foe. Where is your outrage? He means Obama's America. I get it, and that's John the photographer from Stone Ridge. And Mike says, Trump and Putin. Just to make it clear, Trump is following Putin's orders in the world, not being crazy for no apparent reason. Trump is following Putin's directives, orders, destroying NATO, destroying our alliance with Europe and our democracy. Putin and his people have money over Trump. There is much written on this. For example, see the New Republic, July 13, 2017 article, Trump's Russian laundromat. Trump is up to his neck with the Russian mob. The media is wrong to speak of this, quote, summit in terms of what Trump can or should accomplish. He is simply reporting to his handler, and that's from Mike. And Bob, our friend Bob, says, be afraid. I remember being very afraid prior to the 1986 summit between Reagan and Gorbachev in Reykjavik. Gorbachev was much smarter than Reagan, and I feared he would bamboozle the president into a foolish agreement. What saved us was that Reagan was so enamored with Star Wars, no matter that it was absurdly expensive, it would not work, that he would not budge and give Gorbachev anything. The frustration on Gorby's face was clear. We are lucky, plain and simple. But this meeting between Trump and Putin is absolutely terrifying. Putin is an evil genius, and Trump is his usual idiot, probably turned, quote, as Nance and Jade surmise, we are doomed. And that's from Robert. Okay. And Stephanie says, no one in media talks about the strong potential of Russian meddling in the next Brexit vote and its connections. No one in media talks about the strong potential of Russian meddling in the Brexit vote, which greatly benefits Russia and its connection to poisoning to eliminate the two Russian spies living in the UK. No one in media has mentioned the potential of Russian meddling of the Alexandra Cortez win that dislodges a senior congressional leader poised to take over from Nancy Pelosi. Eliminating is a strong senior member of Congress on the Dem side is another coup for Russia. Did surprise, so surprising for Cortez herself, happen without meddling?
Well, I think, I mean, we talked about that, saying that, you know, there is a good chance of Russian interference in our midterm elections, and that's certainly a possibility.
And the 2020 election.
And there's evidence of this. The FBI, the intelligence agencies, they've all come out and said we should be very concerned that the Russians are inside our system right now and can do pretty much what they want. So this shouldn't surprise us.
And it seems to roll off the back of the administration. They sort of portray it as deep state trying to undermine our election from within the country.
Maybe,
Mike. It's unbelievable.
Maybe, Mike, but maybe what it's not rolling off their back. They're delighted with it. Mm. That's the problem. Daisy, a regular car son, says, what keeps me up at night? Hi, panel. Will the legitimate democracies around the world ever trust us again as long as we rely on the Electoral College to elect the president? With the Electoral College, we could elect Trump again or another Trump in the future. And that's from Daisy. And Jen says, Trump and mental health. I agree with many of you that Trump lacks the mental capacity to be a fit leader in the country. However, using 1950s language like crazy and insane adds to the stigma around mental health issues and adds to a cartoonish element to what is a very serious issue. Trump's probable sociopathy will very probably lead us to a war and deserves a more serious tone, and joking about it while grouping him in with everyday people who struggle with their mental health isn't part of a solution. And that is from Jen. And then finally,
can I just say something right
sure,
there? I just think it's important. We talk about this president leading us to war. I do think it's important to remember that he hasn't actually done that yet. But George W. Bush did lead us to war. So there is a history in the Republican Party well before Donald Trump of acting on things that are not true. Lots of men and women lost their lives in Iraq because we went to war over weapons of mass destruction that did not exist. That was George W. Bush, a Republican president, that did that.
And you heard about it right here at WAMC that it was baloney. Martha says, Trump's power. Hello, panel. Trump has nominated Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court because Kavanaugh is for giving the president more power. Trump knows he can do whatever he wants. Kavanaugh, Alito, and Roberts, et cetera, won't stop him. Even though his party has both houses of Congress, he knows the court will defend his power. We are returning to a monarchy. Doesn't anyone remember that Charles I annulled the Massachusetts Charter and appointed his own governor when the colonists wanted free trade? They no longer had a voice. It led to the Tea Party and the Revolutionary War. Is that what we want? And that's Martha.
Nobody wants war. Everybody wants this to work out. It just are different versions of what has to work
right,
out.
Right.
All right, let's move on to some other subjects. Again, we're waiting for the press conference. Something tells me it probably won't happen during our time on the air. I don't think it's going to happen in the next 10 minutes, but we'll bring it to you when we can. So let's move on to some other subjects and talk about other stuff. Beginning with, this is a story that happened on Thursday, and because of our Malcolm Nance special on Friday, we didn't get to discuss it. The shockwaves of it in New York State are certainly still reverberating, and we have a lot of New York State political experts with us this morning. So let's talk about Elaine Calieros and the guilty pleas of not just Elaine Calieros, but two others, right?
Correct. Guilty verdicts, yeah. Actually.
Guilty verdicts, yeah. My apologies, on all counts. With everything, I think there were five convictions. Is that correct?
Right. All guilty as charged. The Calieros, who was the architect of the nanotechnology boom in New York State, and he's very well known
SUNY
in the capital region, and was the president of SUNY Polytechnic.
Very well known, Mike. And if you stood out in front of the New York State legislature and gave them a poll and said, okay, can you tell me who Elaine Calieros is, whether anybody would know, or Joe Prococo, who is quite famous, or Todd Howe? These are the guys who surround this governor and who were among his closest advisors, and nothing has touched the governor, and because people don't know them.
Just to what happened on Thursday in the Manhattan court, a federal court in Manhattan, is that Caliaros was found guilty of wire fraud and conspiracy. And basically, he was steering contracts to friends or to individuals in the upstate billions development, you know, economic development program. It turns out these individuals were campaign contributors to the governor, and there was
shocking.
How strange.
Some, you know, if you look at the timing, it's just disgraceful. And you're right. So the governor now has had Todd Howe, who has been a close aide to his father and to him for years, Joe Percoco, who's like his other brother, as he described him himself, and now Elaine Caliaros, convicted of crimes. And it's and what the governor says is justice is done, and he seems to have no connection to this. And we have our reporter Chris Bragg over the weekend reported that while Percoco was technically on leave of absence back in 2014 running Cuomo's reelection campaign, he was going dozens and dozens of times to his Manhattan office and making phone calls on his official phone. And we got the court, we FOIL'd under the Freedom of Information Law, the court, I'm sorry, the phone records. And he's been calling people in the governor's office, political connections, Todd Howe, all during that time while he was, quote unquote, out of the picture, working off the clock on the election. And he was doing it right out of the Manhattan office.
Good point, Mike.
So, I mean, nothing seems to happen, though. Nothing seems to happen. It's almost like you can lay all this out and.
Well, it's amazing. You now have two senior members of the Cuomo administration have been convicted of felonies. They are going to jail. How many more members of his administration need to be convicted of a crime?
Why do you say two? It's three, right? Because Caliaros.
Well, I'm just counting, but members of his administration.
Percoco. Oh yeah,
I'm really. I mean, I'm counting. I'm counting Percoco and Caliaros as real people that he, you know, he hired.
Offices.
He hired. The others are just associates of those people. So, I mean, how many more people in his administration have to be convicted and go to jail before Democrats and the people of New York wake up and say, you know what, it's time for a new governor?
So then Cynthia Nixon comes out over the weekend and says, oh, here's an idea. Maybe you should return the money that you got from the people, from your large contributors. Maybe you should give that money back and not use it for your campaign, for the people who were indicted. The governor then says, oh, well, I would have to ask the federal prosecutor about that before I did that.
In other words, there's no such thing as right or wrong.
Well, then, Preet Bharara, who is no longer in the post, but certainly held the post and was the man who
the U.S. attorney that
the U.S. attorney who brought these charges originally, said, "Well, look, he knows that isn't going to happen. He knows that can't happen, and he's well aware of that, which is why he said it."
Well, in my opinion, there was only one thing for him to do at that moment, say, you know, I am going to return all of that money, not because I think we did anything wrong, because it would be the right thing to do. These people were clearly trying to.
How much does he have?
Oh, he's got like $30
million.
And
don't forget.
But don't forget, though, this week is also one of the big bellwethers for the election is obviously financial disclosures come out this week, so we'll know how much money that Cynthia Nixon and the governor raised. And obviously, how many actual individual donors they each have.
Going into the September primary, correct, as she's challenging him.
But I think we have to keep in mind here the real crime here is that we're talking about billions of dollars of taxpayer money, money that you and I have all contributed into the system, and it is being used for illegal purposes to line the pockets of wealthy contributors. It's a waste, and this money is money that could have gone to public schools. It's money that could have gone to the MTA. It's money that could have gone to infrastructure, and that is corruption at its finest.
Well, it could have gone to the competitive bidders who did not smooth the way by giving money. You know, the governor's spokesman continues to insist that campaign contributions have absolutely no influence on decisions made out of the second floor of the state
capitol. Except in this case, one and one made two, right? I mean, they gave the money and they got the bid.
I mean, there's also
and by the way,
just
the bid was rigged in that First they said you had to have been
50,
in business.
One of the years. Right. You had to have 50 years experience.
Oh, we made a mistake. It was really 15 years.
The whole process is rigged anyway because you don't have a process that allows the state comptroller to oversight the entire process, right? Yeah. That's step number one.
But we could use a database constantly. These bills all have been introduced in the legislature that would do all the things that you're talking about, create a database so the public could go in and track all these upstate development deals. But it doesn't exist.
But Mikey, how, and Terry, how did he get away with it? In other words, what he did is he gets into office and the first thing he does, he doesn't want Tom DiNapoli on the same ticket with him. We don't really know why, but I have some ideas of my own. Tom DiNapoli now gets to be the comptroller, and the first thing he tries to do is to take away his pre-audit for nonprofit abilities. And the bums in the legislature under Boss Hastie and the others, they go along with them.
Well, you're exactly right. All these legislators who are out seeking re-election right now, every state senator and every assembly person, had an opportunity in the last session that just ended to pass these laws that would have provided more accountability, made it more difficult.
And given Tom DiNapoli back the power,
which
this governor took away.
And they didn't do it.
And now this is the same governor who is backing somebody named Tish James, to run for attorney general. She would be the one who would have to watch him and what he was doing. Yeah, right. That's going to really happen.
And he's helping her raise
money.
Yeah, that's really good.
In her challenge by Zephyr Teachout, who is also seeking the Democratic nomination for Attorney General in the September primary.
It's corruption on so many fronts, you know, and also what you're seeing here is something that's very equal to what you're seeing at the federal level. Here, what you just described is a situation where Republicans don't want to pass that type of ethics oversight because it will damage their ability to win elections. Democrats don't want to do it because they don't want to stand up to this governor. So you really have a standoff here that's not unlike what we're seeing at the federal level.
For some reason, economic development in this area leads to conviction. You saw that with Joe Bruno. You see that with Elaine Calieros. There seems to be always that link.
But when two members of your administration have been convicted of felonies, at some point you have to question the competency of your leadership skills. Is he really competent to be governor? Do you really want a governor who has members that are being convicted of felonies and going to prison? At some point you have to ask, either he knew about it and he's covering it up, or he's just completely incompetent. Either one is bad.
Your point is extremely well taken in that to hold him accountable, let's say he did nothing wrong. Let's say he didn't say to those guys, you go find me money no matter where you go, go find me money.
I love that accent, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, nice. Go find me money.
I bet that didn't happen.
Anyway. He didn't hire his campaign people, Michael, to not raise money for him. He hired them to raise money for him. And maybe he didn't give them enough direction. But that really is a sign of incompetency, as Terry says, because he came in and he said he was going to clean up Albany. And in fact, this is about as bad as it gets.
Well, anybody that's worked in state government in the state legislature can tell you that his claim that he has all these checks and balances in between himself and all these things that happened is just not true. There really is nothing between Andrew Cuomo and the way the system operates, except for tissue paper that he puts there. He is in control all the time of everything that's happening in our state capitol. And any checks and balances he puts in between are just mere optics to make it appear there's something there, but it really has no power whatsoever.
I was talking to a legislator, and she knew, or he, I forget, she or he knew, you know, and I said, well, how can you support this guy? Well, I have bills that have to be signed.
That's exactly it.
I have bills that have to be signed.
Well, at some point, you have to stand up for what is right, and in taking care of making sure our dollars are spent in an ethical and economical and efficient way, it has to be priority number one, and it's clearly not.
All right, we're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Mike Spain, Terry Gibson, Joe Bonilla, Alan Chartok, thank you, and we will return with more after this short break.